The song is called "The World I Know" from 1995. Collective Soul is the band, and there's some really thoughtful lyrics in this song that are appropriate for right now and the world we know now. We're talking with Paul Eno and Ben Eno about their book "Behind the Paranormal," chock full of really interesting ideas and theories and hands-on experiences in their 55 plus years of together investigating really weird stuff. One subject we have not touched on yet that I want to get into in the next few minutes is UFOs and ETs and how they fit into this overall paranormal matrix that our two guests have discussed. As you know, if you've listened to me on this program for a while, I have a great deal of respect and admiration for the work of Dr. Jacques Vallée, who has studied UFOs and thought about him, maybe the deepest thinker on this subject ever. And he says, in essence, in a nutshell, we've had centuries of observation of UFOs, and it seems like these are craft, some of them anyway, that they enter our reality, not only our airspace, but our reality, and they can manipulate space and time. And if they have the technology to manipulate space and time, they could be from anywhere, from any time, not only from other planets, but other realities. So I guess when we come back, I want to get into the UFO question, ET question, and how it fits into this model that the Enos have been describing. Whether or not, if technology can bring somebody else here, could technology take us somewhere else? And then we'll get to phone calls. Back with more in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. So, gentlemen, I think you heard my little bit there during the break about UFOs and how they fit into the bigger picture. A Jacques Vallée statement about this seems to be technology that can manipulate space and time. So as we have discussed, a lot of people who will start researching Bigfoot or ghosts end up as someplace else. And some people who start with UFOs end up with some other topic. I guess it works in reverse, right? Some people who start looking into ghosts end up looking into experiencing UFOs or ETs, something like that. Ben?
Well, I guess it sort of is. It all leads into one another. It's like exploring flap areas. First, we start off with one paradigm, like, okay, we're looking at ghosts. We're looking at all these sort of things that are happening. And then you sort of expand it outside of just the one house you're looking at, and you talk to the neighbors, and like, oh, well, I just saw Bigfoot the other day, or I just saw a UFO the other day. That sort of thing, where we've been running into that more and more, where it's more of a unified paranormal, or even with running into the military as well. So it seems to be not only just one thing that's going on, but everything's going on simultaneously in sort of the same area. So, for example, here in our tiny little town of Woonsocket, we've had UFO experiences on top of ghosts, on top of things like that, especially right at the end of our street here with what was called the Devil's Hole. So I've seen Bigfoot in the woods back here. At least I think that's what it was. Who knows? But it's sort of they fit in just like everything else fits in. They fit in as part of something that exists within the multiverse. So if that's all well and true, that might be a little bit scarier than thinking like the sort of Star Trek way of thinking that, okay, well, they're just a few planets away or a few solar systems away. That's all well and good. But if it's right next to us the whole time, that's kind of the terrifying thing, that at any point in time, something alien could be right next to us.
So, Paul, do you think they're aliens as an extraterrestrial or aliens as from some other reality? And if they have technology to get here, could we get technology that gets us there?
Well, all of the above, George. I think people from other planets, this really takes on new meaning. Maybe it takes the meaning out of the whole idea of aliens in the classic sense. Aliens are simply people who are other, you know, than us. They could be from other planets within our own reality. They could use multiversal travel, okay, simply by traveling without even really having to go anywhere, as a lot of particles seem to do in the subatomic level. Anything is possible. They could be because dimensional really isn't the same thing as other worlds, but they could be multiversal. They could be all of the above. Time travel, for example. Jim Peniston in the Rendlesham case, one of the Air Force witnesses to that 1980 December incident of UFO landings in England, believes these are time travelers. Well, sure, sure they could be. They could be all of the above, as I say. And if you talk to a scientist, there's one I'm thinking of who studies time and is interested in time travel. He says what we say, you don't travel back and forth in time, you travel sideways, because everything is simultaneous. There really is no past, it's not linear, there really is no future. Of course, that shoots reincarnation. And everything changes in here, hence our point, everything you know is wrong, so to speak. Everything has to be rethought, and even that might not be good enough. So yeah, we can get there too. And we might not even need technology. If you talk to these shamans from 30,000 and 50,000-year-old traditions, it's all done with the mind. And it's just as real as it would be in a machine. You know, George, I'm always struck by the idea, okay, well, this is a more advanced civilization that's coming to visit us. Well, how do you define advanced? Is it by technology? In the 1930s, the most advanced technological civilization was Nazi Germany. How'd that work out? I'd rather have someone who's advanced morally and spiritually to deal with than someone who's advanced necessarily with technology. They don't go together. So yeah, we can go there. We can do anything we want. And so it really, so can they, because when you get down to it, at some point in the multiverse, we're the same people.
Well, it can open up stuff, and we could talk for 6 hours about the idea of immortality and other lifetimes, destiny. What happens to you after you die in this reality? I think maybe if I go down that road, we're not going to get to any calls, so we might just take a couple from our listeners starting now. East of the Rockies, Ryan in Missouri. Good morning, Ryan. Good morning.
You fell asleep.
Hello?
Ryan, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we're asking what's on your mind?
Well, I had a couple questions, and I'll ask them and take my answer off air. But I was wondering, do you think that this, you know, as you said earlier, if you look at it like bubbles, you know, some of these bubbles pop and others move into other bubbles and stuff like that. Do you think that that could actually physically manifest in our universe? Like what I was thinking was like a black hole. You know, because it's basically just siphoning off energy and taking material out of our universe to essentially blow up and make a new bubble. And then my second question was, do you think that this collective consciousness that you were speaking of could also be applied to the calendar of consciousness, how every, you know, a few thousand years, we go through a dark age of consciousness, and then, you know, we go into a golden age of consciousness.
Let's let our guests chew on that a little bit. Thanks for the call, Ryan.
Ben, you want to take the black hole thing here? Or?
Well, I mean, first off, I'm going to say I am not a physicist. The closest I get is audio engineering. So I guess that is entirely possible, Ryan, that black holes could manifest due to quantum physics, and it could take material from our universe and bring it to something else. But I think the thing to remember here is that we're not talking about immaterial universes. We're talking about fully physical universes that exist simultaneously. So I think we need to take ourselves away from the sort of four-dimensional universe that we're thinking about now, and that, okay, well, it's just an alternate dimension, rather than thinking of it like dimensions, because dimensions meaning what we currently live in, which some modern physicists believe we live in an 11-dimensional universe rather than a 4-dimensional one, or even you have the sort of physicists that we tend to ascribe to believing in the multiple worlds interpretation. So if the multiple worlds interpretation is correct, then we need to think about it in a way that all of these universes are physical, simultaneous, full worlds that exist. So yes, a portal could open. Rather than thinking of it like a black hole, we could think of it more as sort of a window into another world. Is that a good, better way of putting it?
Yeah, okay. I don't have any problem with that. I guess, I mean, there are other ways to put it. But just to get to the second part of Ryan's question, I like the term consciousness calendar. I've never heard that
before. Yeah, I like that too.
Yeah, I think that we have to realize this. We talk very freely about changes in consciousness, especially today, you know, when there's such internet to communication, everybody talks to everybody else. But I think we have to realize that throughout the history of our species, and really throughout the history of the whole multiverse, I mean, consciousness is a universal concept. I mean, native peoples very often will tell you that all things have consciousness, things that we will refer to as inanimate objects. I mean, they don't believe in any such thing, and I don't either. Consciousness is a universal concept. It's not just, again, it's not the island theory. It's not just within ourselves. And when things change consciousness-wise, it could, certainly in the past, have been among a certain group of people, not necessarily the whole biosphere, okay? So I think we have to be very careful talking about that. And I think we kind of have to, I think the mistake we make consciousness-wise, and again, consciousness being a very, very broad concept, is that we, and the New Age movement does this, and I disagree with it, is we look inward. You know, okay, how do we create our own reality? Say, that's a big thing. I think you really have, and a lot of spiritualities, even older ones, will do that. You look inward. I think that's a big mistake. I think you have to look outward. And many older traditions will say this. You find yourself by forgetting yourself. You fulfill your consciousness by joining with the consciousness of others, and not even doing that, realizing that you're already joined with the consciousness of others, and you're already part of this great unity that we talk about. It's already there, and the limitations come from limitations we put on ourselves through our very narrow paradigms, our narrow understanding, our very limited epistemology, and our very limited education system. I think when we approach spirituality particularly correctly, we expand, and consciousness expands with us. I don't know if that makes any sense, Ryan.
You guys have a sort of touches on a chapter in the book I thought was very serious and somber, and it's sort of a warning. It's about suicides. Mm. You know, how people would say, well, I don't like this life. They embrace this idea of the multiverse. I'm going to end this one here because I want to exist in the other one where things have got to be better, which is a pretty bad idea.
The wrong way.
Yeah.
They don't understand it. This came to me, and this is going to sound pretty strange, I guess that's what we're doing here, is that I've dealt with, Ben hasn't yet, but I've dealt with people who've actually committed suicide. And when you approach these cases from the multiverse point of view instead of from the old spiritualist paradigm, things really change. And I can give you really amazing examples of that, but in the cases of suicides, it's kind of like be careful what you wish for. And we really do make our own bed in the multiverse, I think, as people and as a group. They turn up in worlds of absolute aloneness. And what is suicide? For those, you know, there's a mental health question and all these things. But for people who deliberately make the decision, very often it's a decision of ultimate selfishness, okay? And you get what you wish for. You make your own bed. What do things do in nature? They move from one place to another, one state to another, along the path of least resistance. If you're already a selfish person in this manifestation of your consciousness, you will be in others. If you're Mother Teresa, who realizes that it's not about you, it's about all of us, then you will move to presumably when you quote-unquote die, I don't even believe the thing exists, but you're already existing in many worlds where you are selfless and an enlightened person or whatever you want to call it, higher self, whatever you want to call it. So I think the consciousness is a very kind of slippery concept, and suicide itself is a real upheaval in the pattern of consciousness of yourself and of everyone else.
A bad idea that affects you in multiple versions of yourself.
It affects everyone.
Let's take on the first-time caller line, Tim in St. Mary's, Pennsylvania. Good morning, Tim. Hi, what's on your mind?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. What's on your mind?
Well, my question is, when ritualistic summonings, I guess you would say, were performed, they probably still are, but anyways, when they were done, was a sacrifice done because they needed somebody that was scared or had some sort of fear? Because if everybody else was participating in this ceremony, they wouldn't have been scared. They would have been anticipating something, so they would need some sort of fear, according to what you were saying earlier.
Okay. If Ben will want to join in, maybe.
Ritualistic sacrifice.
Yeah.
Huh?
Well, I guess, well, we mentioned that. One of the things parasites, we believe, fed on, and when they fed upon and farmed communities, was the whole idea of human sacrifice. I think that was part of it. Can you imagine the terror and the horror that resulted from this? Now, very often, ancient civilizations would practice human sacrifice on condemned criminals. And as a matter of fact, they often looked at it as a way for them to save themselves, strangely enough, you know. But I think that in really, really nasty gods, you know, civilization that they controlled.
Well, I mean, look at your part of the world in Pennsylvania and different parts of Mississippi Valley with the mound builders.
Yeah.
That sort of area of the world where they practiced human sacrifice. And I mean,
it's
not
believed that they did.
Well, yeah, the idea. Well, yeah, it's believed it. But, you know, it's interesting to look back in human history and see the sort of societies that did practice it and some of the negative stuff that occurred.
Well, again, the whole Bell Witch case, George mentioned that before, 1821 to, I should say 1817 to 1821 in Robertson County, Tennessee. And the thing seemed to start to feed on the whole community. It started small. The film, The American Haunting with Donald Sutherland and Sissy Spacek was involved, and I was kind of involved with that. But the whole case seemed to be based on four entities. And as Ben described them, they would repeat sermons in churches, but the root cause, it was probably sexual abuse going on by the father against the daughter. And again, had these people been cowed enough, they might have taken over. But people would ask it, "Who are you? Where do you come from? What are you doing here?" And all it could do was say that it had Native American connections and had been in the area for centuries, and hence tying in with Ben's idea of the mound builders. Mm-hmm. They're the people who were there. They exhibited, and this is a little off topic, but they exhibited a fascinating characteristic we've seen among parasites, and that's that the longer they spend attached to a human host, some of them anyway, some species, the more they tend to forget their own origins. Really strange. I've had parasites. I'm thinking of one attached to a rather well-known artist in New York City, worked with for years, and it was afraid to separate from this person because it didn't know how it was going to eat, where it was going to go, and there was genuine fear there. So these are fascinating creatures, but you don't want to tangle with them. So certainly human sacrifice, one of the many buttons that can be pushed to control and to feed.
We'll go back to the phone lines after our next segment. I'm just asking folks, when we come to you, I mean, don't be off in the kitchen. So we're going to start on the wild card lines when we come back after the break. You know, it occurs to me, and we're going to the break here in about 40 seconds, we don't really know what these things look like. They assume different shapes at different times to different people. They are, in all intents and purposes, shapeshifters. They are skinwalkers by definition.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, mm-hmm. We have photographs of them, but again, that's just seen through the membranes.
You have photographs of one version of them.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly.
Okay, we're going to go to a break now. When we come back, we'll get to as many of your calls and questions and comments. I know some interesting stories based on what I'm reading on my screen here. Patti Loveless takes us into the break. This is a song recorded in 1999. It's called "Can't Get Enough," and she's a heck of a singer. We'll be right back. That's the Mamas and Papas from 1966, and yes, it is Monday morning, at least for everyone listening to the program live. Welcome to the Work Week. We're talking with Paul Eno and Ben Eno, our final segment, discussing their book, Behind the Paranormal, Everything You Know Is Wrong. Coming up, we'll go to the phone lines, and they're pretty full, so please be courteous to your fellow Coast listeners and get right to it. We'll be right back. All right, our final segment about Behind the Paranormal with Paul Eno and Ben Eno. We go to the wild card line, Charles in Elgin, Texas. Good morning, Charles.
Hey there. Yeah, hi, George. Y'all talk of suicide makes me think about the... Sometimes what you most people think about that sort of stuff is often wrong. But anyway, and also me and Paul kind of share a trauma, although in my case, my dad was murdered. So sort of that sort of inspires deep thinking on a lot of subjects, including spiritual ones. And in this case, I just wanted to, I really like the way that they're doing this. This is a very important way of dealing with, paranormal phenomena, all that sort of stuff. But I think the important thing, I wanted to make a comment, because I think Max Planck did say that consciousness is fundamental. If people can understand what that means, and for human beings, you could say a part of consciousness, I mean, for human beings to live or exist as, or souls, I guess, human souls and even animal souls, you know, infinite love is another word for that kind of consciousness. But the thing is, it seems that that when you really understand that that's what everything there is, even what people call physical matter, and there's nothing there. I mean, from the quantum point of view, there's nothing there. There's not even particles. Particles, what are particles? You know, there's nothing there except, of course, it's consciousness. It is the fundamental thing, or infinite love, and for us souls, you know. And it seems to me that Paul and Ben both are, I don't know how to put it, on the right track, or we're going, that's the right direction to help people become more enlightened again.
Well, Charles, let's let them weigh in on this, the idea of consciousness as being the only thing that's real, I guess.
Well, the fascinating thing about consciousness is the only thing that we really can know about it concretely is that there's nowhere in the human mind or brain that we can point to and say, ah, that's where that's from. So ultimately, the conclusion would be that it's non-local, that it's something outside of ourselves. And I think that we shouldn't exclude the physical, and I don't think we should exclude the spiritual. I think that together we have to sort of evade the dualism as portrayed in the last 500 years of philosophy, thanks to René Descartes. We have to sort of mix the two together to create something that is entirely outside of both of those things, to sort of understand and get in touch with consciousness itself. And what say you, Dad?
Yeah, thank you, Charles. I mean, I hope we really are on the right track. Many people are on the same track, including yourself, apparently, and let's stick together and see what we can find out.
Indeed.
First day of school.
So, Paul, you had said, you know, the consequences of suicide is you end up going someplace and you're all alone. What's your take on it, and that you're talking about your own father there?
That's a good question. I thought you might ask that. The situation with my father, as I understand, I was 7 years old, and as I understand it, there was a physical, like a brain tumor, so I was told, that had affected his behavior, although I saw nothing but love from him. And the difficult thing was, you know, obviously to deal with that, and I was in a strict Roman Catholic school at the time where, you know, you went to hell when you did something like that, but a really good nun got me through. But there was never any haunting of any kind. Everything was very peaceful at our house. But I think that when people make the deliberate act, particularly in suicide pacts and things, people do it as groups, I think it really can be an act of ultimate selfishness. I don't want to judge that, but I've seen people in worlds of endless aloneness. It's the best way I can put it.
In this case, though, I mean, his act set you on this path, and then your son on this path, and you've shared a lot of information with millions of people.
Yeah, exactly. It's so anything can be turned into something positive, even if it was a negative thing in itself, you know, depending on how you use what you learn from it.
We're going to go to another caller from Texas, Keith. Good morning, Keith. You're on with Paul and Ben.
Good morning. I have a set of keys that I always carry. And after my wife passed away, I hired a house sitter. And the keys are jamming me in a pocket. So I straightened them around, and probably 10 miles down the road, my phone rang, and it was the house sitter asking me if I'd forgotten my keys. Why did I leave them? I reached in my pocket and said, I just adjusted my pocket. They're in. I said, where'd you find them? She goes, on the coffee table. I said, I left the house with them. A month later, I'm leaving, and I always put my hard hat between the seats and my drink and my snack between. Get down the road a couple miles, reach behind me, no hard hat, no snack, no drink, no first aid kit. It's like, well, call a friend, hey, can I stop by your house and grab a hard hat? I lost mine. Get back home, my hard hat, first aid kit, and snacks are sitting in the middle bedroom, where I had picked them up from and put in the truck. And at work right now, I have a piece of paperwork. It's my handwriting, but the date keeps changing. It keeps disappearing from the computer. And I have to keep reaffirming with other people that I've already taken care of this. So I sent messages to everybody now that I'm back home saying, okay, I did this on this date. I did this on this date. I did this on this date. I got one person that said, yes, I understand it. I see it. It's okay. I'm waiting to find out what happens tomorrow when it disappears again and I get yelled at again.
Yeah, you really got to cover your bases. Any thoughts on this, gentlemen?
Well, at the risk of sounding like a line from Ghostbusters, that's all we get around here day in and day out, right? This is a very typical experience of something that we might think, if it didn't keep happening like this to our caller, that this is something, just one of those things, and by the end of the day, you forget about it. The multiverse is not just, it's rather simple as we illustrated in the book, but in fact, we're going through these bubbles. We've been using that metaphor as all along, all the time, every microsecond of the day. As Ben said earlier, if you know, we knocked over the computer, we would have created literally another bubble, and the one in which the computer was not knocked over continues normally, and this expands exponentially, and this is one aspect that is believed by some quantum physicists, and we tend to see it ourselves.
It's just interesting that it's happening so frequently.
Yeah, and we hear that all the time, too. When the bubbles jostle one another, for lack of a better way, you can have the keys disappearing, or the keys never came with you, and the wave function collapses, and the worlds are kind of doing so at a very interesting rate. What I would want to ask the caller is, what is the nature of the what else is going on there? What is? Do you live in an area of that might be considered a flap area? Are there rivers that converge because water, could, unless it's distilled, conducts electromagnetic energy? Mm. Do you have high water tables, sandy soils, clay soils? This is all stuff for another show, you know. But there are all sorts of factors that we would want to find out about in order to maybe understand why these little glitches in the fabric of space-time, to use a classical term, are taking place.
Well, we have links on the Coast website, Keith, if you want to contact our guests. I'm sure they would be interested in hearing more about this. We're going now to Florida. Jay in Florida on the wild card line. Hi, Jay.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen and Coast listeners. Real quick, he shall persecute the saints of the Most High and shall intend to change times and law, and the saints shall be given into the hand for a time and time and a half. So I believe that is definitely the Mandela effect, but ultimately because of CERN, and I'm hoping that all of you are familiar with that, as I know some people are not, and how them and also chemtrails is playing their part in shattering our shield layers and firmament and protection of Earth and to rip the veil away. So if you can comment on that. But what I really wanted to get into is this, whether you want to call them doppelgangers or clones, maybe where the origin of that is, because myself personally, I have experienced, and only living here in Florida and in Missouri throughout time, I'd say especially after my teens, that I've been told multiple times of like, well, you have a twin there, including all the way out in California. And another time where someone said, you know, they saw me, tried speaking to me, and wonder why I didn't respond. I'm like, no, I don't work there. I haven't been there.
Let's tackle the doppelganger part of it there, Paul or Ben.
Yeah, it's a lot of material Jay is suggesting.
It's amazing what can be said in such few words. So I guess the interesting thing about about doppelgangers, I guess, is maybe there's a bleed over from another world in which you are working in these places that somebody happens to see you. Yeah, I think that's
one possible explanation.
Indeed, I think that's more the side that we fall upon, is that maybe that these people that are so close to you are sharing in a world where all these things that a different you is doing in daily life.
And perhaps, Ben, the thin places are getting thinner, because this Mandela effect that Jay mentioned is coming up again and again and again and again. And I'm asked to be, there must be 20 shows I've been booked on. They all want to talk about the Mandela effect.
Oh, yeah.
After Nelson Mandela, and the whole thing started when people were having memories of him dying in prison, which he didn't do. He went on to become president of South Africa and did a rather good job of it. And so this is known as the Mandela effect. a psychologist would say confabulation or false memories or combinations thereof. But too many things happen. Too many people remember certain things. And
I was going to say, it's too many people for there to be a false memory.
Yeah. Well, look at us with the comb in our downstairs bathroom here. Now, Ben's married now and lives somewhere else, but we all remember this white comb. And all of a sudden, it's gray. Yeah, I mean, things like that, you know, as were happening to Keith, I think, too, in a way. But this seems to be happening more and more frequently.
On a larger scale.
Yeah, and that's maybe a subject for another day. Because
yeah, it seems playful, some of it playful.
Well, yes, it depends on your point of view, but yeah.
We're going to show, let's go west of the Rockies. Laura in Corona, California. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning. Hi, George. I love the show. I'm so happy that I finally got through.
Great.
But I just had a quick question. What is your take on spirit boxes? Because we recently had one in our home, and different voices came through, and I don't know if it's just coincidental because it is done with a radio. It's truly spirits from the other world.
Well, Ben, you're the audio engineer.
So spirit boxes are funny little boxes that are essentially broken radios. They pick up frequencies that are hanging around in the atmosphere, or the ionosphere to be more specific, and they sort of transmit them into this little box. I do not subscribe to them, although it is indeed possible for a voice to come through that may sound spooky. I am not convinced, nor do I rule out EVPs in any way, shape, or form. I think that I want to learn more about it, but I just don't know enough about it. But what I can tell you about spirit boxes is that they're just essentially just broken radios, and I don't think you should spend money on them, honestly.
Thanks,
well, I
Laura.
Guess it's just with EVPs in general or electronic voice phenomena. When people come back from places like Gettysburg, which is EVP central because of a terrible battle that occurred there, and they have voices, recorded voices that sound, that speak in 21st century accents or terminology, and they're supposed to be Civil War. So, I mean, I just...
There's a lot of power of suggestion in there as well, especially if, like, you're watching something on YouTube and there's subtitles to it. I think that's incredibly dangerous.
Yeah. Parasites can do it, too, so I can trust nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, in this.
First-time caller Tom in Louisville, Kentucky. Welcome to the program, Tom.
Yes, I was listening to your show the other night, yesterday, and that somebody called in about a dream that they had where they were laying in bed and they could not move, and they seen shadowy figures above the bed. And I had that same dream a couple months ago, and I was just wanting to know what's the significance of it.
Oh, okay. Well, I assume you were listening to Coast to Coast, not our show. Okay.
Yeah,
so,
Coast
all right.
to Coast, yeah.
Well, dreams are a really interesting point of view. They could be points of contact with lives you're actually living in parallel realities, because we've had some very strange physical things occur. Ben and I have shared dreams. And we were on this very show in 2011, and we came out with what George might recognize as the epilogue of the book Behind the Paranormal, talking about this good world. Okay, it's a funny term. You'll have to read the book because I can't explain it now.
Right.
But we had over 3,000 emails, only two of which were negative, and one guy later apologized. All the rest of the people were talking about dreams they'd had or waking experiences of this place. Mentioning things that Ben had been at, but which we had not said anything about on the air and never written a word about. So again, perhaps thinning boundaries, and dreams being shared, it may have a greater significance than you realize, but it is real in our experience.
That's a pretty common phenomena that people report that. And
yeah.
Then you can bleed in other things, out-of-body experiences,
yeah.
Near-death experiences. It's all sort of seems to be like it's on the same plane.
Because consciousness is shared. Mm. It's non-local. That's one of the proofs of it.
We'll try to get one more call in. How about east of the Rockies? Steve?
Steve, yeah.
How you doing?
Good morning. Oh, boy. I clear my throat. I'm doing great. This has been the most interesting broadcast I have ever heard. I mean,
well, thank you. We got about 2 minutes left.
Okay, real fast then. First of all, he's right on. Right on. I practiced mind control since I was 17. I was mentored for 2 years by a nun, Catholic high school.
I'm now 61. I perceive things through not my only my eyes, but through my mind's eye. I can, I live my life by it. It's opened up a whole new world to me. I'm currently living on an Indian burial site, which I did not know when I purchased the land. High iron content. I have found crystals on it. Not only me, but other people have heard drum beats, chanting. There's lights. I have photos. My dogs even react to these things. I finally went out and I have communicated with them. It sounds crazy, but this is all true.
No, I mean,
Steve, let us get a reaction from Paul and Ben. You could have gave them a lot to chew on there. Thanks.
Yeah, well, again, sounds very interesting, and I thank you again for your appreciation of the show.
Indeed.
I think that again, we're in thin places where we're experiencing real lives of real people when they were experiencing it. Again, everything is simultaneous, apparently. And if you're dealing with indigenous peoples, particularly the Native Americans, they know you're there, but they're not dead. They realize how the universe and the multiverse is set up. And their descendants, who are shamans, will tell you that. So I'd say right on, right back to you.
Yeah.
Very interesting, and, keep going.
I think really the thing to say is just, just seeing what's really there, and seeing what's really there is probably like the simplest way to put it.
Right.
Paul Eno, Ben Eno, the book is Behind the Paranormal. Everything You Know Is Wrong. You have a radio show as well that a lot of people listen to on a regular basis. This is a fascinating piece of work, and I really appreciate you being here. I look forward to further communications.
Thank you, George.
Thank you.
All right. Talk to you again. Want to thank as well John Hall, my earlier guest, and my crew there at Coast to Coast, my pal Nathan Staton, Donna Walker on the phones, our ops manager Dan Galante, our webmaster tonight Greg Bishop, and producer Chris Boros. George Norrie is back tomorrow night. I'm George Knapp, and I'll be back here in a couple of weeks. Good night.